I wanted to touch on, we have been going through, as you know, we've been going through the book of Acts. And as I have described it sometime, my slow plod through the book of Acts. But we're going through the book of Acts. But we talked about last week the calling that Paul had on his life, the calling to go to Jerusalem, and the pull, the tug, the burden that he felt to go there, and talked about his calling. And based on some questions that I was asked after that service, primarily about, am I called? I mean, this is just kind of a general, generic question. Am I called? Am I too old to be called? Is there something for me to do? Is there something that God has for me to do? Is it possible for me to be called? I wanted to stop, press pause, and go, yes! Yes! Yes, you're called! Absolutely, you're called! And spend some time talking about that a little bit. Because one of the things that is an absolute playground for the enemy, playground, is the belief I'm too old, I don't have enough, or I'm too young, or I don't have the experience, or I don't have the skills, I don't have whatever it might be, I'm not important enough to be called. Because that's one of the things that society has a little bit of a tendency to do. Well, if you're called, it's going to be to something important, and that means you're important and you're a big deal, and we all want to be a big deal, and unless it's a big deal, we don't define it as a success. Well, I'm going to tell you that God may call each of us at times for big things and at times for very small things, and every single one of those things is significant and it's eternal. They are, it doesn't matter if it's a little boy or little girl at Camp Hope that is asking about Jesus for the first time in their life, or it's some big shot political figure. There's no difference. God is calling us to do what he has for us. Don't ever buy the lie that you aren't called. Don't ever buy the lie that at some point in time, you may not be moving into a different calling. I want you to truly know and embrace that God has called every one of us to something. It may be many somethings. Something both significant and eternal. That does not mean that it has to be something great, big, and huge. It could be something little. Little in our eyes, but significant and eternal in God's eyes. You may not know what that is or where to start finding out what that is. And my point today is not to sit here and tell you this is the formula for doing that. Fill out these sheets. I'm going to tell you how God has called you. I'm going to tell you what your personality traits are or whatever it is. And you're going to leave here today with a sheet telling you exactly what God's calling on your life is. That would simply be arrogant on my part to say that. But we're going to talk about the things that we can do to press in to find out what God has for us and where he's calling us. There's a couple of verses that I really want you to grab onto as we walk through this. First off, I want you to know with certainty that you have been called. Ephesians 4:1. This is Paul writing. I, therefore, a prisoner for the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you've been called. What's the presumption in that verse? You've been called. And I want you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you've been called. Paul is writing this from prison, and he wants his readers to know it, and he wants his readers to own it, and I want the same thing for you. I want you to know that you're called. We may not know how we're called or where we're called, but I want you to know and I want you to own the fact that you are called. You are called. God will show you how you're called, but know for a fact that you are called. Then there's a verse we discussed briefly last week, Joel chapter 2, verses 28 through 29. And it shall come to pass afterward that I will pour out my spirit, and notice we're talking about capital S, in other words, Holy Spirit, on all flesh. Your sons and your daughters shall prophesy. Your old men shall dream dreams, and your young men shall see visions. Even on the male and female servants in those days, I will pour out my spirit. Who is this promise for? A promise that was fulfilled at Pentecost. Who is this promise for? Everybody. It's for everybody. Male, female, slave, free, young, old. It's for everybody. So being older does not mean that there is no calling on your life. And just in case you were beating yourself up about your squandering your time, your opportunities, your life, God made another promise to the prophet Joel just a few verses earlier. And it's a verse that people like to talk about, but I don't know if they grasp the full significance of it. Joel chapter 2, verse 25. I will restore to you the years that the swarming locust has eaten. These were locusts God sent. And he's restoring what they've eaten. So you may have squandered your life. You may have squandered your time. You may feel that that's what's happened. It's easy to focus on two areas in terms of calling, both of which are used as a playground by the enemy. One we've already kind of briefly touched on, which is age, either young, or too old. The other is specific ministry titles. We love to think that the only way you're truly called, the only way you can step out into a calling, is if you have some title at church. You're an elder, you're a deacon, you're a pastor, whatever that is. That's what's required. And we'll address that in just a second. It's easy to look at age and get a little discouraged or disappointed. So let's look at it. It's easy to come to the conclusion that our time has passed, but has it really? Let's look at the world for just a second, in particular the business world. You've probably heard of most of the examples I'm about to give you. Harlan Sanders, the founder of Kentucky Fried Chicken, had lost multiple jobs, including a job as a lawyer. He lost his job as a lawyer as a result of a courtroom brawl he got into with his own client. And then he became an employee at a gas station and kind of came up with a recipe for fried chicken. And at age 62, in 1952, franchised his Kentucky Fried Chicken for the first time. At age 62. Leo Goodwin, founder of Geico Insurance. He worked as an accountant in San Antonio in the 1930s. He realized that the insurance industry needed to be overhauled. And in 1936, at the age of 50, he founded Geico. Martha Stewart, we all know who Martha Stewart is, or most of us do, built her business, her first business, catering, in her mid-30s. But she was nearly 50 when she signed the contracts for what would become the magazine Martha Stewart Living, which is really kind of the beginning of her empire, as we describe it. Ray Kroc was 51 when he stumbled upon a small chain of hamburger stands run by the McDonald brothers. It is a given in the business world today that a trend referred to as second act entrepreneurs is literally exploding. Okay, that's the world. What about the evidence we see of the irrelevance of age in God's word? How old was Moses when God called him? Well, that would be 80. How old was Moses' brother Aaron when he was called? That would be 83. How old was Abraham when Isaac was born? 100. How old was Sarah when Isaac was born? 90. How old was Joshua when he assumed leadership from Moses? 80. How old was he at the Battle of Jericho? 101. Now you may say, different place, different time. But factors like age are absolutely irrelevant to God when it comes to calling and the opportunity to step out into calling. You could certainly say that with both Moses and Abraham that they squandered years before answering the call in their lives. and they made plenty of mistakes along the way, and not one bit of it mattered to God. Look, I have had my share of regrets about time spent and how it was spent. I was going through with a mentor of mine, Pastor Steve Schell. I was going lamenting to him a while ago about the fact that I was starting into ministry, quotation marks around it, as a pastor for the first time at age 60. And all these wasted years, finally found, on and on and on. And he looked at me and he said, because I'm just going to tell you something. He said, in order to really do well at this, you have to have life experience. And you've got life experience. And by the time most people get life experience, they're burned out. And they want to leave the ministry. You're excited about it. He was of the opinion that just like we're starting to see second act entrepreneurs on the rise, we're going to see second act ministry being on the rise. That people are going to start entering the ministry for any number of reasons, including the fact that, let's be real, I don't have a daughter to put through college now. I don't have many of the things that are kind of financial restrictions that are on somebody when you're younger in your life and you're building kind of things up. And so, if the government puts the clamps down on the church, for instance, and certain measures are necessary, we can take them without losing our minds. I mean, we have some freedom that way. And that comes with age, that comes with time, that comes with the ability to look at things and say, maybe what I've lived in my life is applicable to this situation. Maybe it will make me better at this situation. I mean, if you look at the people that are going out into the mission field now, who basically the mission field is a second act for them. You look at the trend with, for instance, executive pastors at churches, bigger churches, smaller churches. These are people that have been in business and want to dedicate the second act to Jesus. And so they're coming in and using those skills to run the operations of churches. Maybe not to preach, but to use the skills that God has given them to do that kind of thing. Now let's look at the belief that anything done for God has to bear some form of ministry label in order for it to constitute a calling. I read a book called Halftime. And as a result of reading the book called Halftime, I went to the Halftime Institute down in Dallas, Texas, a number of years ago. And the author of that book, Bob Buford, was running the Halftime Institute. Now, the Halftime Institute, people have a tendency to want to go there after reading the book Halftime because they think if you sit at the feet of Bob Buford, he's going to tell you what the next act is. He's going to tell you what it is that you're supposed to do. And let me tell you something. Bob is real, real super clear, or was while he was still alive, was real super clear. That's not what's going to happen. You're not going to come down here and leave knowing what your calling is. You're not going to come down here and leave with a roadmap for what comes next. That's not the point. You're going to leave here with the tools to figure out how to start down that journey. I went down there. One of the reasons I went down there was I was leaving the business world proper. And I wanted, as a second act, to go into some form of ministry. And so there was a ministry based out of Florida that was a men's ministry, did men's retreats, men's seminars, those kinds of things. And I sat with Bob, and Bob had heard my testimony, knew what I'd done professionally. And I'm sitting there with Bob, and he looks at me, as only Bob can do. He looked at me, and he said, "Does this really float your boat?" And I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Does men's ministry really float your boat?" "What do you mean?" He said, "When the men's retreat is coming, do you get excited about it?" I said, "I look forward to it." He said, "But is it like Christmas Eve waiting for Christmas morning?" He said, "Do you have that level of excitement about it? You can't wait. You wait all year for the men's retreat." I said, no, not really. He looked at me and he said, Eric, you're an operator. That's what you do. And you can serve God just as much in that way as in a men's ministry. He said, you're going to be miserable in that. He goes, I'm not telling you what your calling is, but I'm pretty sure that's not it. So find out what God has for you, but understand there's things that God has gifted you to do, and it's okay to do those things. You're an operator. It's who you are. And God can use an operator just as much as anybody else. And what he meant by an operator is you run businesses. You run organizations. That might be what God has for you or some derivation of that. But be okay with it. And does calling presume a ministry title? Will you need to fill a role at a church in order to be called? Will you have to be a pastor? Do you have to have a title within the church structure? And I hope you see where we're going with this, that the answer is a resounding absolutely not. Absolutely not. There is a really good example of this. There was a really successful businessman who was in the process of retiring and had some conversations with his pastor about the fact that he was retiring and that he wanted, as a second act, to go into some area of ministry. And the pastor was kind of waiting for those conversations to take place, and one day he comes in and notices that in the back of the church during the weekday, there's this guy in the outfit of the custodian cleaning up the church. Now, please understand, I'm not suggesting that there's anything bad about custodial work. It's good. It's necessary. It's a blessing to the church in every possible way. But the pastor comes up to this guy and says, what are you doing? And he said, I wanted to serve Jesus. And this is the only way I figured I could do it. I couldn't think of anything else in the church that fit my skill set. So I figured this was the ministry for me. And what that pastor realized is just how much he'd failed at speaking into this guy's life and helping him to see that having a role specifically at the church with a title within the church was not what was required in order to be walking out into the calling that God has on somebody's life. I mean, one of my mentors from the Halftime Institute, did some coaching with him, a guy named Lloyd Reeb, was a real estate developer. He was going into the second act of his life, and he told the people at his church, hey, I'm a real estate developer. Use me any way that you can to facilitate what you want to do. Their response to him was to say, well, we do these projects with Habitat for Humanity, and maybe you can help out with those. And he said, partner, let me tell you something. If you think that being a real estate developer means my skill set is swinging a hammer, I got news for you. That's not quite what it's about. I know how to swing a hammer. I'm more than happy working on a house for Habitat for Humanity, but my understanding is you've got a building project going on. You've got a project where you're adding on to the church. You've got permitting to do. You've got, you know, financing to do. You've got a lot of stuff. And guess what? That's kind of my sweet spot. Maybe you can use me in that role, because Lloyd saw very specifically that the skills he had were applicable in God's kingdom every bit as much as they were in the world. So what framework can we use to discern our calling? Where can we go with this? First, we have to understand that a calling comes from God. God called the prophets, not the other way around. And we have to be willing to ask the question, is God calling me, and where is he calling me to? 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 20 through 25. Each one should remain in the condition in which he was called. Again, the presumptive language there is when he was called. The presumption is you are called. Were you a bondservant when called? Do not be concerned about it. But if you can gain your freedom, avail yourself of the opportunity. For he who was called in the Lord as a bondservant is a freedman of the Lord. Likewise, he was free when called is a bondservant of Christ. You were bought with a price. Do not become bondservants of men. So, brothers, in whatever condition each of you was called, there let him remain with God. If you're in the marketplace when you're called, it's okay to remain there. God can use you there. If you're a teacher, God can use you there and will use you there. If you're wherever, it's okay to remain there and see how God can use you there. And then we have to look at how we think about things. And Paul's got a few things to tell us about that. And Romans 12, 1 through 2 is what I will call our anchor verse for this discussion. Romans 12, 1 and 2 gets used a lot, gets talked about a lot. There's a lot of ministries that are based on Romans 12, 1 and 2. You know, the renewing of your mind. Think positive thoughts. Think happy thoughts. I think Paul is telling us something way, way deeper than that in this text, in this these verses. And it's directly applicable to what we're talking about here. Romans 12, 1 and 2. I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind. And here we go. That by testing, you may discern the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. Paul is giving us a structure here. What is that structure? Well, first off, that we are and everything we do should be seen as a sacrifice that we offer to God. And in that sacrifice, we are worshiping God. I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Get it clear in your mind that everything you're doing is a sacrifice and it is worship, and that's what it's about. Second, that the discerning of the will of God presumes a transformation taking place in us. A transformation that is the result of a renewed mind. How is my mind renewed? Through time spent in God's word and prayer, praying for God to shape me and direct me. And what is the result of a renewed mind? Where does it take me? Well, the renewed mind can grasp something really incredible. It can grasp the notion of spiritual gifting. What are the gifts God has given me? The presumption that we have to accept is that God is not calling you to something he has not gifted you to. Look, that doesn't mean you're not going to have to go through it. That doesn't mean that God may not be calling you to something that you don't think you're gifted in, but he wants to build you out in it. I said this morning, partially in jest, that I'm not a caregiver by nature. And God is putting me through the process. I'll tell you what that's about. I'll tell you what that's about. God is showing me a gap in my personality and my life that has to be dealt with. Empathy. You have to learn and walk out in empathy in order to be part of a world that's doing God's stuff. You can't be a jerk. You know, I mean, I'm sorry, but you just can't be. I mean, listen, I joke that, you know, think about my wife having to leave the house every day. I'm the one doing her hair. I mean, that is not something people would generally look forward to. I mean, and trust me, I'm prone to making a production out of that. There's all kinds of imitations and gesturing and, I don't know what we can do with this, you know, all that kind of stuff. I mean, and there's nothing funny in that to a person who's sitting there going, A, my shoulder's broken, and B, you're the one doing my hair. You may find this amusing sport, but I don't. And Lord, the Lord is building me out in this and giving me empathy and showing me, look, you may not think you're a caregiver, but you don't get a pass on that. You have to care for other people. There are things that we have to do that we may not try to think that we're gifted in. I mean, one of the things that people will love to do, well, it's not my gifting. I'm not going to do that. Listen, when we went to Kazakhstan, one of the greatest experiences of my life for multiple different reasons, including the lifelong friends that I made there, I'll tell you, I did the classic super spiritual deal. I'm not called to missions. I'm called to maybe assist missionaries with their journeys. I'm called to help them. Write a check, those kinds of things. That's what I'm called to do. Well, we think you ought to go with us to Kazakhstan. Well, I don't believe I'm called. Well, we think you are. Well, I don't think I am. Well, would you go if you, do you have a passport? No, I don't. Would you go if you got a passport in time? Sure. Will you apply for it in a timely fashion? Sure, I will. I waited till, I'd heard that it took at least 180 days to get your passport, right? So, and that's if you expedite it. So I didn't expedite it. Waited until we were 90 days out from the trip. I figure I'm covered, right? I got my passport back in 10 days. I mean, and it's one of those things where it's like, okay, God, thanks. I guess I'm supposed to go to Kazakhstan. And the blessing came as a result of it. The presumption that we have to accept is that God is not calling you to something he's not gifted you to. And he may be calling you to something that you don't think you're gifted to, but he knows that you are, or that you need to be, or that you need to improve in. 1 Peter 4:10, as each has received a gift, use it to serve one another as good stewards of God's varied grace. Gifts equal God's grace in human lives and personalities being used for the good or betterment of others. Can you think of how God has gifted you and continues to gift you? Do you see needs in the world that truly move you? Needs that stand out more than others to you? Do you look around and stuff just hits you? Do you say, why isn't anybody taking care of that? Or boy, that sure looks like a need to me. You'll watch this stuff begin to pop as you search for it. Romans chapter 12, verses 6 through 8. Having gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, let us use them. If prophecy, in proportion to our faith. If service, in our serving. The one who teaches, in his teaching. The one who exhorts, in his exhortation. The one who contributes, in generosity. The one who leads, with zeal. The one who does acts of mercy, with cheerfulness. Paul is rattling off various giftings. And at some level, they are things that every Christian is called to do. We are all called to encourage people. In other words, we're called to prophesy. We're called to foretell. Not foretell, forthtell. We're called to encourage people, speak into their lives. We're called to be generous. We're called to give. But despite the fact that this is really a list of what every Christian should be doing, Paul is treating them as gifts because they are gifts. Are you pressing in to see what your gifting is and how it might be used to affect the world around you? Have you ever thought about generosity as a gifting? Look, I met a guy, that Woody, from Woodpecker Trucking in Pendleton, Oregon. And I don't know if you've ever met Woody. You probably have. But Woody is one of those guys. Woody's a believer. And Woody truly believes that he's got the gift of raising money for kingdom purposes. He believes if it's about him, it goes away. And Woody, I'm sure, has his foibles. Had his foibles. I don't know if he's still alive. But he had his foibles. But there was an instance where Woody bought a building in downtown Pendleton, Oregon, and decided that basically he was going to use that building to kind of benefit Young Life in Pendleton. So he basically gave them half the building, built it out, told them how that they only needed to use one floor of it, and showed them how they could rent the other two floors of it out to raise the operating capital they needed to survive for a year. And then he sold the other half of the building and paid for the entire project and made a slight profit. He believes that that is a result of the gifting that he's been given by God. If he doesn't use it for kingdom purposes, it goes away. And he's got examples of how that happens in his life. It's happened in his life. He sees what his calling is in that regard. When my mind has been renewed, I am focused on God. I will see my skill set and see it as an extension of my spiritual gifting. What do I mean by that? Now, I'm going to use a movie quote here, so please forgive me. Sometimes we get confused and think that we have a particular set of skills. If you've ever seen the movie Taken, you know that particular set of skills. I love that line. But sometimes we get confused and think that if we have a particular set of skills, that those skills are separate and apart from spiritual gifting. Maybe they are, but probably not. We are just currently using them in a day-to-day way. Skills like finance, music, carpentry, management, or leadership. We may use these skills for work or for play, but they are gifts. And they are a gifting from God, and he intends for us to use them to glorify him. The fact that a musician or singer may not be using their gifting to glorify God does not mean that it isn't a gift from God. It is. That's where it comes from. And the desire that God has is that his children would use the gifting. First, that they would become his children by adoption, by faith in Jesus Christ. But then that they would use the gifting that he's given to us to glorify him. That's what it's all about. Marcus Buckingham wrote a book called Now Discover Your Strengths. And one of the things that points that Buckingham makes in his book is that we've kind of got it wrong in our world. We kind of focus on, in terms of improvement, in terms of building up, we focus on the weakness of children and our employees. And really, what we ought to be focusing on is the things they do well, the things they like, the things they do. It doesn't mean we ditch everything else, but it means if we're going to bring a focus into a life, we focus on the things that they do well, because that's a gifting. And it's a gifting that I would suggest to you is from only one place, and that's for God. Look, I'm not strong in math proper. But I have a gifting, a skill, a strength in seeing patterns and trends in numbers. I can look at an Excel spreadsheet, see that, and immediately it's the patterns and the trends in those numbers kind of pop out at me. It's almost like they pop off the sheet. I can tell you if it's an inventory problem. I can tell you if it's a, you know, it kind of drill down on what the problems are. And I'm sitting there going, what on earth is this for? Other than business. When you think that it works for business, what's it about? Until I had a church a number of years ago call me and say, hey, can you help us with this? And all of a sudden you realize that that skill, that ability to see those patterns and those trends was able to help them get through a problem that they had. In look at him and say, hey, you know, I know you think it's really cool to have multiple locations. I think God's telling you to only have one because the other two locations are bleeding you out. That's what the patterns show me. That's what the trends show me. And so you look at all that happened in that situation. There was a humbling. There was all kinds of stuff that went on in that. And it all came basically from a gifting that I thought had nothing to do with kingdom purpose. But in that instance, had everything to do with moving kingdom purposes forwards. The whole point of the halftime experience is to see the next chapter and to redeploy kingdom skills for kingdom purposes. As your mind is renewed, do you find a recurring interest and/or awareness of people or projects? Do you find yourself reading books about the same basic thing? What stuff you just seem to keep returning to? What really floats your boat? And is this an interest that is blooming into a desire to take action? A desire that, if we're honest, almost overwhelms us. It is a burden that we feel for people, for places, or for things. And as our mind is renewed, we look intently to our local church to both affirm and confirm us in our calling. Look, this is a group of people that God has put you in the middle of that can help you affirm or confirm what you're called to. If you have an idea, something that is really stirring you, talk to me or others here. Let us pray with you. It's something I do regularly with mentors of mine, other pastors, the elders here. And look, if we're honest about it, we call elders elders for a reason. The term means something. At least it should. And part of it is, there's a reason why any number of groups use the term elders with respect. Look, I'm just going to tell you, I've taken a number of people with me to kind of ministry things in this area, Saturate and that kind of stuff. You want to know that the generalized rule? I'll sum it up with one person. I mean, the young ministry people at Saturate viewed me as having one benefit to that whole experience. I was Don's ride. That's it. They saw wisdom, they saw experience, they saw somebody that they could talk to. I got a call from one of them the other day. Do you mind if I call Don? I'm not trying to poach him from your church, because I said, that's good, because I'd kill you if you tried. But, you know, can I talk to him? I need somebody to talk to. I don't have a dad figure in my life. Can I talk to somebody? And then the pastor of that church said to that young man, he goes, oh, and by the way, he's got a bunch of them over there. Really? Really? We can talk. I mean, experience is not just age. It's not just numbers on a calendar. It's speaking into people's lives, children, adults, young people, old people, other older people, young. I mean, it doesn't matter who it is. People are crying out for experience that can speak into their lives about what comes next and what God has for them to do next. It matters. If someone in this church has a check in their spirit about something, you may have to be willing to listen and maybe even course correct based on the wisdom that's spoken into your life. This is one of the reasons why fellowship in a local church body, not doing church online, is so important, and why you need to be both active and involved in a local church. And, and ultimately, the renewed mind sees everything through one single lens. Does it glorify God? Is our sole goal in everything we do to worship and glorify God? Look, I've thrown a lot of things out here today, and the things that I've mentioned in no way constitute a complete or exhaustive list of the ways we seek to discover our calling. This is not a formula. This is not a checklist. I'm not suggesting that I'm providing you with one. I'm talking about Romans 12:2 and some of the ways that we look at things, and we look at a life that's transformed, and it's transformed by the renewal of our mind. And that's how we test. That's how we discern what the will of God is, what is good and acceptable and perfect. That is what we're talking about. Not a checklist, not a formula, but do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. We should not seek others for the purpose of telling us what to do. Too many people spend all their time looking for a word. Look, I've had clients, they were wonderful believers, and literally went from conference after conference to event after event, looking for someone to give them a word that was going to tell them what to do next. Generally speaking, I have to tell you that the people that come up to me and offer to give me a word are usually wanting to tell me something that they want me to do for them. Something that they want me to do for them, something that they want me to give to them, usually money, and that kind of thing. Or they want... And people who are out looking for a word, I'm just going to tell you, generally are looking for somebody who's going to tell them what they want to hear. It's going to tell them, going to help them get to the place that they want to go. I mean, you kind of want to say, how many people did you have to go to before you got that word? And the problem with doing that is it's basically what it represents is laziness. I don't know my calling, and I just don't want to spend the time with God to figure it out. So I'll just find somebody to tell me. Look, this is like sanctification. It's a process. Truly seek the Lord. Live in His word. Pray fervently and constantly. Seek wise and consistent counsel. And eventually, you'll know. But I want to assure you of one thing, and it's the point of what I wanted to talk about today. And I want you to own it, and I want you to grab a hold of it. God does have a calling on your life. And it is never too late to begin to walk it out. Look, it may be your kids. It may be your grandkids. It may be your coworkers. It may be kids you teach in school. It may be kids you work with at Camp Hope. It may be your neighbor in your apartment building. It may be any number of things. And you don't know when God's going to bring you to that place, to that time, to that moment when it's now, it's go time. You are to speak into a life. You are to speak into that person's life. I mean, Debbie had a young boy that she worked with at school. Horribly abused little boy. Horribly abused. That was when he was in like second grade. He's now going into high school. She'd heard he was doing okay. He's still got problems. He's bouncing from house to house and couch to couch. But he's in his youth group at church. And he's headed in directions towards leadership of the youth group at church. And let me tell you something. We talk about Awanas here at Hope Church. I know for a fact that you are going to be in heaven and you are going to see kids that you spoke into their lives at Awanas. They're going to come up to you and say, I'm here because of the things you spoke into my life on. They're in heaven because you led them to Jesus, whether you realized it or not. You don't know when it's going to be. You don't know when it's going to happen. You may not think that this little thing that you feel called to do, say, whatever, is important until you realize it's eternal. It's significant in ways you couldn't possibly have imagined. And that's why you can never accept the lie of the enemy that you're not called. You're too old, you're too young, you're too rich, you're too poor. Doesn't matter. You're called. That's what it's all about. Be ready for God to direct you and, if necessary, to redirect you. Be ready for both open doors and closed doors. But one thing, be ready. Lord, I just thank you for today. I thank you for all that you are doing in our church family, all that you're doing in the lives of our church family. I thank you for being on the move in this community. I thank you and I praise you. And Lord, show us, give us a burning desire, give us a zeal to know how you desire to use us in this world. Give us a hunger to know. Give us the time to spend time with you in prayer, spend time with you in your word, seek wise counsel, be wise counsel to others, and help us to be about nothing but your business. And Lord, this is a world that needs more than ever to know this, to know where we go. And so, Lord, I just thank you and I praise you. And we just pray these things in your name, Lord Jesus. Amen.